same names in the Bible, but they mean different things by those names, as I'm sure we know. That's why we had a Protestant Reformation, to get back to the Bible. So my point is, God is not going to use Assyria, Phoenicia, Egypt, Greece, or any other nation to bring forth His messianic blessings to the world. He has to create a new nation entirely. And that's where He begins to deal with this man named Abram, there in the Ur of the Chaldeans. He begins to tell him to walk by faith. He gives him certain promises. You can read those promises in Genesis 12, verses 1 through 3. Walk by faith, and I'll take you to a land that you know nothing of, and you actually don't even know where you're going, but trust me, and I'll get you there. And by the time we get to Genesis 15 and verse 18, the promises are ratified in the form of an official covenant. And it says this, on that day the Lord made a covenant. Now, covenant is a big deal. It's a contract, legally. On that day the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying to your descendants, I have given this land from the river of Egypt as far as the river, the great river, the river Euphrates. So we know a Messiah is coming, because right after the fall, God announced the Messiah would come in Genesis 3 verse 15. That's the first messianic promise in the Bible. What we don't know is what people group is God going to use to bring forth this Messiah and His kingdom. And it's really with His dealings with Abram that we learn He's going to set aside the nation of Israel, this nation that would become Israel, and through that nation He would bless them, and through them the Messiah, and then ultimately the kingdom would come. So at this time, God makes a covenant with Abram. You read all about it in Genesis 15. He promises Abram three things: land, seed, or descendants, and then also a personal blessing. And that becomes the structure for the sub-covenants that God would later make with Israel. The land is amplified in what's called the land covenant, Deuteronomy 29 and 30. The seed is amplified in what's called the Davidic covenant. Through David's line is going to come a forever throne, 2 Samuel 7. And then the blessing is amplified in what's called the new covenant, Jeremiah 31, where God explains that one day He's going to take His laws for the Jewish people and put them where? In their hearts. They're going to be regenerated in a national sense. The only parties to this covenant, there's only two. It's God and Israel. It's not the church, because the church doesn't even exist yet, as I'll show you. And these promises are very literal. If you go back and look at Genesis 13:17, it says, "Arise and walk about the land through its length and breadth, for I will give it to you." So Abram actually walked around the land that he was promised. He wasn't walking on the clouds, he wasn't in heaven, he was walking on this earth. So these promises, when you study all of them, are meant to be understood in their ordinary sense. And there are really two things to understand about this covenant. These words both begin with the letter U. Number one, the covenant is unconditional. A conditional promise is, if I do X, God does Y. An unconditional covenant is, God is going to do His thing regardless of what I do. There's no conditions attached to it. So it's very clear that this covenant is unconditional. Why is that? Because when Abram and God entered the covenant together, where was Abram? He was asleep. God put him asleep. And what God did is He told Abram prior to putting him to sleep to take animals, sever them, and organize them into two parallel rows. And that's very common covenant language in the ancient Near East at the time of Abram, because when parties pass through the animal pieces, what they were saying is, if I don't do what I promised to do under the covenant, then let me be cut asunder, as these animals have been cut asunder. So God is basically saying, if I don't do exactly what I promised to do, then let me be torn in two, as these animals have. And you'll notice that Abram is asleep, Genesis 15, and God alone, as represented by the oven and the torch, pass through the animal pieces. There's no conditions for Abram to fulfill here at all. The covenant is eternal, says it three times in Genesis 17, immutable, meaning unchangeable, Hebrews 6. So if a covenant is eternal and immutable, it can't rest on man, because we're very fickle, aren't we? We change our minds easy. And you see that in Abram's life. Sometimes he's in faith and obeying, other times he's kind of, as we say in the States, flaking out a little bit. So the covenant completely rests on God's shoulders. And one of the things that you'll notice as you go through the Old Testament is no matter how wicked the nation of Israel becomes, and they become very wicked as you go through the Old Testament, God keeps reaffirming the covenant to them. In fact, in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 31, and verses 35 through 37, God essentially says, as long as the sun and the moon and the stars remain, Israel will always be a nation before me. So if you want to get rid of Israel, here's the way to do it. Just get rid of the sun, moon, and stars, and you'll take care of that. And God said that as Israel was offering their own children into a fire to satisfy a god named Molech. And they were about ready to go into the 70 years captivity for discipline. And at the height of their disobedience, God comes alongside and reaffirms the covenant. So it's quite obvious that this covenant is unconditional, or it would have been canceled long ago. Beyond that, the covenant is unfulfilled. You cannot find an area in history, biblically, where this covenant has been fulfilled. People like to say, well, it was fulfilled when Joshua entered the land. But you see that dark area there? That's what Joshua got. You see that lighter, grayer area? That's everything that was promised to Abram. A chunk of real estate starting from the river of Egypt, going all the way up to the Euphrates, essentially from modern-day Iraq to modern-day Egypt. As I'll be sharing with you in these sessions, the covenant was not fulfilled in Joshua's day. It was not fulfilled in Solomon's day. Solomon got close, but he never possessed the land forever, as I'll show you. So the covenant is unconditional, and it's unfulfilled. And so that automatically creates an expectation that God at some point in history has to move His hand and fulfill everything that He has promised to the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Because God cannot lie. The politicians will lie. People lie constantly to us. God can't lie. It contradicts His nature. Numbers 23:19, God is not a man that He should lie. Hebrews 6:18, Titus 1:2, many other verses. So you see right out of the gate, there's an expectation that there has to be some sort of earthly reign of Christ. Now, let's go to our third place, and this is the Mosaic Covenant. So let's go over to Exodus 19, verses 5 and 6. And you'll recall, by the time of Moses, now this takes us 600 years into the future, from the time of Abram, so we go from about 2000 BC to just after the Exodus, which is roughly 1446. The nation of Israel, as you know, had been in Egyptian bondage for 400 years. They're brought out miraculously. They're taken to the base of Mount Sinai. And it's at this time God enters into a covenant with them of another sort called the Mosaic Covenant. And notice Exodus 19, verses 5 and 6. It says then, now if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all peoples, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a what? A kingdom. Now that's the first reference to kingdom relative to God's people in the whole Bible. You shall be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the sons of Israel. Now notice the if-then language. If you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my people, my special possession. Now this gets a little confusing because you say to yourself, I thought the Abrahamic covenant was unconditional. Well, this is putting in a condition. And the Mosaic covenant, which is what we're looking at here, is completely different than the Abrahamic covenant.